The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to my Saturday program on this lovely day of May 4th, 2013. May happens to be the month Tan Stoffel and I began the White Network Broadcasting. That is, our first program was on May 28th, 2012. We were, of course, already talking about it for a couple of months at least. And I think we had the website up earlier than May 28th. But other than that, that's what we call our anniversary date. So Tan and I have been doing a four-month progress report program. Well, we quit calling it progress report, but we started out calling it that. Since last September, our first four-month mark. And this month, we'll be doing our one-year anniversary show together on the May 27th, the Heretics Hour, and Hadding Scott will participate with us too. So I'm just wanting to let you know that our direction this month will be as much as possible, but not totally, to the pro-white consciousness movement, you might say. I hate using that word. But to white activists and movements from the past, from whom we draw inspiration today. There's a lot of people involved in that who we probably won't be talking about, might mention, because, you know, we're not just trying to cover this whole thing in that way. But to begin with, Tan has put together and installed an interview with David Lane, the creator of the 14 words, excuse me, as our streaming audio for the month. That's what kind of gave us the idea when he said he had found that. I got, you know, I thought, well, that would be good for us to kind of follow through with that. And so he agreed. And so we have that going now. And you can also listen to it as a podcast by going to the post he created on the website under recent posts. It's listed as a blog, but it has a recording. It has the recording attached to it. I have listened to it, and I was listening to it for a while today just as it was streaming, and I heard things I had not heard before the first time. So there you are. You have to listen to this. You can listen to it quite a bit, I'm sure. What I heard Lane say today very clearly was integration is genocide. Forced integration is intentional genocide. You know, it is always good when you hear someone speaking so definitely and, you know, not qualifying it. And it's something to think about. Integration is genocide. If we could get enough people to understand that absolutely clearly, we would start making more progress, I think. And I'll just let you know that next week, on this Saturday show, I'll be interviewing, Fraser Glenn Miller, excuse me, whose history goes way back. And a lot of you will be interested in that probably, or you know who he is. If you don't know, you better listen and find out. Today, though, I'm going to be talking to Brad Love of Canada. I'm expecting him to call in a minute or two. I told him to call at 5 minutes after, and I know the show is a minute delayed from me at the center here. So, I guess it will be might be a minute and a half yet. That's okay. It gives me a little time to discuss, the fact that he, does not do internet. He doesn't have a computer as I understand and doesn't do email. So I haven't talked to him yet. He has, probably an undisclosed phone number. I'll find out when he calls in. I hope he will call in. I think so. I've been communicating to him through Paul Frome, who is the person who has really championed his cause in Canada. Paul Frome's a Canadian. And so I have been aware of Brad for a while, but didn't know too much about him. I'm happy that he will be on the program today and tell us about his whole story. It's very, very interesting. And it's terrible, you know, and it fits in with what Lane's comment that integration is genocide. So while I'm waiting for Brad to call, somebody was calling an hour before the show, and I think I thought it might have been him, but I couldn't answer it. So I'm hoping that was him, and he'll be calling in soon. I've got there's a lot of other news. This May is going to be a busy month. There's some information that just came out yesterday. I'll just talk about that while I have a minute here. And that is that I'm going to get these names mixed up. David Cole has surfaced. Those of you who follow Holocaust revisionism, David Cole has surfaced as a person who is now completely disclosed and coming out of this hiding that he's been in. People even thought he was dead. He's been living a very good life, the good life, in California, Los Angeles area, as David Stein. And there's an article in the Guardian, UK Guardian, about it. I guess that's the original article from whence everything else has come. And I actually didn't check today to find out if there's anything more, because I didn't want to get caught up in that. So, but it's, I'll have to talk about that probably on Monday some. The things that he has said, he says that he still has the same beliefs. He hasn't changed his mind about anything. My mind is distracted here. He hasn't changed his mind, but you know, there are a few quotes from him, but they didn't say too much. So mostly it was the Guardian, speaking for him and putting words in his mouth. So we don't know yet where he's going to stand, but, there's a lot to say about that, which I will say. Well, now, Brad hasn't called in. I have to say, if Paul Frome is listening, which he ought to be, I think he should find out or send me an email. The emails have to come to Carolyn@CarolynYeager.net, because that's the only one I'm checking right now. So if there's any information on this, let me see. I don't have anything here. Excuse me. Let me know, please. Please contact Brad if that, you know, what the problem is. I don't know, but I'm ready for a phone call, and I don't have one yet. So while I'm waiting, and if Paul can't get hold of, or if there's a problem with Brad, then Paul should call in instead and explain a little bit here about the situation. But I can tell you that Brad's case has been going on in Canada for since 2003. So they call that 8 years, but it's more than 8 years. 2003, that's 10 years. I didn't organize that timeline because this is the newer one. Okay. In 2003, he was charged with something. You know, he writes letters. So I'm just going to tell you what I can here. He's been in prison a couple of times. He's been out on bail. His bail is always very strict. And if he's on a kind of a probation, that's very strict. And he doesn't seem to be a person who can follow those rules that they give him, even though he has reasons where he says that, you know, he can't if he wants to make a living and so on. So according to the information that I have, Brad was released, the last time he was released was in 2009 on these bail conditions. And his lawyer said that the bail conditions that they imposed on Brad Love were more like what you impose on people facing murder charges. That's how difficult they want to make it for him. Now, he is, as I understand, been an oil field worker. And he, he's been an oil field worker, and that's kind of, you know, very independent-minded people do that. You know, these people who work that way are usually pretty independent-minded people. And he started writing letters, but he's obviously intelligent and a good writer. And Paul had told me he was very articulate. If he ever comes on, that would be nice. We could enjoy his articulateness. But I'm having a feeling here that he was calling the first hour thinking and, you know, trying to tell me something, but he can't call here. This white network, I could not take his call. It would have thrown off the whole program. So I explained all that, but somehow people don't get the message. So it's, it may be that he's not going to call, because he was not going to be available and he was calling to tell me that. Bad time to call and tell me that. And I did send an email to Paul Frome, before the program explaining about the calling. And, if he's checking his email, which he should be, and he should be listening to this since this was somebody he wanted to get on here. But I'm not having any response from anyone. So I'm going to go ahead as though I'm just not going to hear from Brad. I'll talk about his story, and we'll tie it in then with the whole story of immigration, because I do backup work in case something goes wrong. I do have a lot of good stuff about immigration and what immigration is doing to us. So whether Brad comes on or not, I'll stay on this topic. So let's see here. I'd like to go back to the beginning, which is here somewhere. It's here somewhere. Frome has written over a 20-year period. Brad Love has written over 10,000 letters to elected officials and newspapers. See, so he is, well, over 20 years, that's not so bad. Over 10,000, that's quite a lot. I actually didn't figure out, but what is that, 200 a year or something like that? That's a lot. Although we have our friend Christine Miller, who she hasn't written that much. She would write, I think, once a month to her newspaper until they wouldn't let her do it anymore. But nobody ever dreamed of arresting her for it. I guess he was not quite as careful in some of the things he said. But it was in 2003 that he was sentenced to 18 months in jail under Canada's thought control anti-hate law, which is Section 319 of the Criminal Code. And I'm told that I understand the situation in Canada, you know, reasonably well. I know they've got these draconian kind of laws. I know that Canada is under the control of the Jews. You know, the United States is under Jewish control too, but they don't make it as obvious as they do in Canada. I mean, it seems to me they don't. And maybe people in Canada are totally unaware of it, but you know, they have these, they had that, judicial court for, that Mark Lemire was fighting for so many years and several people have gotten caught up in it. That was all run by Jews, where they could bring people up if they were bring people up before it and fine them and cause them to shut down their websites and stop doing what they're doing. They couldn't put them in jail, but they could do that unless they didn't go along with what they were told to do. So they had that for years, and that was proven to be a setup, you know, where they tried to entrap people in order to get people to come before that. It was all this one Jewish lawyer who's doing it all. So I don't want to belabor that. But Canada has a reputation similar to Germany's in the way that they feel this necessity to protect Jews in Canada and to protect all non-white people and immigrant people. And there is a very clear effort to make Canada a mixed race nation. And it just is a little more strange there than it is here in the United States, because we do border Mexico and we have all these Mexicans and others from south of Mexico coming up through that way. But Canada is bordered by, you know, the frozen Arctic and the United States. So you wonder why. It's the same in Sweden and the Norway, countries like that. You wonder why they have this desire to bring in non-white people in such a northern type of environment. Because it's a part of the globalist plan that they're under, and they, you know, the New World Order plan, which is very, very real. And this is why this is what's behind all this. So you have these laws in Canada, which would, because of our First Amendment and our long history of free speech, they have not been able to accomplish here what they accomplished far more easily in Canada. Canada is supposed to have, all right, here's the call. Finally came in. All right, this looks like it's going to be Brad. So let me get to my Skype page. I hope he will not hang up until I can get him answered. I'm a little confused now. Okay, Skype, here we go. All right. Now, this should bring him up. If he's there, looks like I did it. There it is. Yes, hello there.
How are you? This is Brad Love in Fort McMurray.
Well, hi, Brad Love. I'm glad you finally called in. What happened? Did you just get confused about the time?
I've been calling you for hours, and there's been no answer. I've called you before every hour since 8 o'clock, and I just could never get...
Brad, yeah. Somehow Paul Fromm did not give you the proper instructions. Probably didn't understand himself, because people don't seem, they think they hear something and they think that's correct. I said distinctly you had to call in at 5 minutes after the starting of the show, and I gave the times for every time zone in United States and Canada. And yep. you are in the what, Eastern time zone?
I am, yes, in Alberta. No, we are in the mountain.
You're in the mountain time zone. Okay. So mountain time would have been 12 noon, 5 minutes after 12 noon for you, which is, but you called in, you were calling in all morning. And you see on this, you're calling into the white network. And not only is there nobody to take your call before an hour before the show, but also the way our system is set up, I cannot take a call before the show starts, or, a lot of things won't work right for me. I won't hear the music. I won't hear the prompts and so on. So, and it can even shut me take in. And then if I talk to the person and then they hang up, you know, I go off the air and everything goes down. And, Tan Stoffel, who is, the creator of this system, told me, last night that he would be traveling today, and he would be unavailable for any help. So, I thought that, it would be clear, but that's all right. These things do happen. And I've been chatting away, and now I'm glad that you're here. And I'm sorry that you spent so much time and got frustrated.
No. It's Saturday morning. I'm just hanging around the house anyway, doing laundry.
Okay. Okay. Well, Brad, it's nice to meet you finally.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you. And I've been going on about the difference of the laws in Canada and how it is in the United States and how we're all moving toward this, and how integration is genocide and forced integration is intentional genocide. Those are the words of David Lane. And I was just going to go into the very beginning in 2003. I'm trying to find, you know, when this all started. And I had read by Paul that you had written 10,000 letters in the past 20 years. That's something like that. So why don't you start there? Tell us, I'm sure people want to hear, tell us, you know, just exactly how, when and how this started and why you got into writing all those letters.
Well, I got into this writing letters when I started working full time, and I was watching, you know, my income tax rate and the taxes I was paying. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and I'm a well-read guy. I'd read the newspaper and I'd see, oh, the government gives $20 million to Haiti, and then another $38 million to Mali, and then more to some African country. And then on the next page of the newspaper, I find out that the hospital doesn't have any money. And I would just kind of connect the dots and compile these newspaper articles and send them to the politicians in charge. And they didn't like that. Wow, here's a guy who's paying attention to us, and yeah, we don't like that. And he's only a young guy, too. Man, imagine if this catches on. Let's send the police to his door. And that is exactly what happened.
Well, how much, who were you writing to at this time? I know you said politicians, but,
whatever politician would be in the paper that day.
Okay. And where were you living then?
I was living in Toronto.
Okay.
That's where I grew up. Mm-hmm. My father did the same thing as I.
Well, there you go. We do follow in the footsteps of our parents very much.
Yes.
We can hardly help it, you know.
My parents are fed up Canadians as well. They look at their pension check, right, because they're retired, and they look at what politicians spend abroad on people and countries that hate us. And yes, they can easily connect those dots. They know where their money went and why they don't have it, even though they paid into it, like a democracy should be. Well, they don't actually pay taxes. None of us do. They're taken from us, right?
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah, I'm not a believer that our governments actually need taxation. They did that for other reasons.
Well, they need taxation to a point, right, to pay for the necessary. But when you see them giving money to overseas countries or buying warplanes and giving them to overseas countries, then you know they have too much money. They've taken too much from us.
Well, I don't mean I don't mean no taxation at all, but it started out that there shouldn't be income tax. It is ridiculous to tax people's income. It's just no basis for it whatsoever. That's what I'm talking about when I say that. But of course, because we have all kinds of taxes in society that we're all paying one way or another, and that should be enough. That, you know, and they should be fully disclosed too. But income tax is what would you call it? Kind of a crime against the people.
It is. They are pimping you.
Yeah.
The government is pimping you. The more you work, the more you lay on your back for them, the more you will make for them. They will take a bigger cut, which is how it is in Alberta, because we work a lot of overtime here, you know, in the oil sands, and they are just raping us for millions, and we get very little back from it. We support all of the illegals on welfare in Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver. We support all the multiculturalism, all the immigrant programs, and we have very little of that here in Alberta because we don't want that, but we sure pay for it. Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, the comparing Canada and the U.S., living in the U.S., I tend to think, wow, that's the Canada is really bad, and people in Canada say opposite. They say, boy, it's really bad in the United States. You know, those people are just right. But it's I think Canada is just so anxious to get more non-whites in that country, that government is, and all, but at the same time they don't have as bad a non-white population percentage wise as we have in the U.S. Is that right?
Well, It's getting there. I mean, they know Toronto is almost a non-white city now. And if you bring this up to even to the media, they will be the ones to phone the police on you too. Yeah, the media is great for free speech. If you're in the media, then they can criticize whatever they want. But if you're a citizen journalist like me, the media will phone the police on you. And I have had that both in Toronto and here locally. in Fort McMurray.
Well, you called yourself a citizen journalist. Right. How do you consider that? Is that your letters, or is there more than that?
I'm a writer. I follow politics. I get it. I get politics. I pay attention to it. Because you know what? If you ignore politics, then politics ignores you. Right? And when you're 68 years old and you're getting a $700 pension check, but you need $1,700, and you never spoke out about this in your entire life, well then perhaps you deserve to live in poverty and misery. But I'm not going to be that guy. I'm going to be the guy who spoke out and make sure I get my money, because I paid into it, and it is my money. Because if I don't get it, they'll just give it to Haiti.
That's right.
Or Mali, or Costa Rica, or you name it. They just throw a dart at the map, and who can we give money to this week? And the problem is, there's not too many guys like me speaking out.
Well, so when I do speak out, I was going to say is, why are there so few people like you?
You know what? Most Canadians are afraid. They are afraid. They're not even sure what they're afraid of. They're just afraid. And they're comfortable being afraid. And most of them believe that the government is actually working in their favor.
Yeah, we all believe our own senators and representatives, and you might say your MPs, whatever. We all tend to think that they're not bad. They're doing pretty well. How do they get us to think that? Because they know their constituency, and so they get on the right side of a couple of issues that are important to their constituency. And then on the others, you say, well, you know, the other guy is worse, so I guess I'll have to stick with this guy. You vote him in again and again.
Yeah, I know. If you're reading about Canadian politics, most Canadian MPs don't even have free speech rights in the House of Commons anymore. They are not allowed to bring up abortion or what they're spending on war planes or anything. Stephen Harper won't allow his own caucus to question him or criticize him. So even MPs don't have free speech rights in the House of Commons. So why would they get on my side? We're fighting our own battles here, Brad. We don't have time to help you. Sorry, man. you understand that?
It's terrible. That's just amazing. You really are a very articulate spokesman for this.
Well,
I should have had you on sooner. Now, what? Go ahead, because I forgot what I was going to ask. Go ahead.
What's the matter? Well, like I said, I just got back from Toronto. I recently got sentenced to 18 months in jail. I'm out on appeal bail. My appeal bail is $22,000 cash and $250,000 part of a house. And this is all for a breach of probation. Now, if I was in Toronto, and I've been in Toronto jails, okay, and I got an 18-month sentence for breach of probation, I've been in jail talking to other guys in jail. Say your average Jamaican crack dealer. If he got charged with breach of probation, after a 20-minute hearing, he might get a 30-day sentence with a free legal aid lawyer to do it all for him. I've been doing this for 4 years, okay, flying back to Toronto, spending tens of thousands of dollars on my own lawyer, fought this thing for 4 years, and they threw the book at me and gave me the maximum sentence of 18 months.
Right. Writing letters. Well, how do they might say, well, you know, you've been here before and you keep coming back, so now we're going to really throw the book at you. Is that
That's it. Yeah. Yep. That's basically it. You know what? And I'm a one-of-a-kind guy in the court system, and most of the courts and the judges, they don't even get this. You know what I mean? They just look straight ahead and don't blink their eyes and pretend that justice is being served. Nobody will question, why is this man here for a breach of probation? Why is this trial lasting 3 years? Not one jurist or crown attorney or judge will ever question what that kind of absurdity. That's when you kind of know they're in on it.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
And the media...
Brad, you have... are there people there in the room with you, or do you have something on, like a television or a...
Oh,
radio.
I got a television set on, but it's down very low. Okay,
yeah, but
it's lower now.
Hear it. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
It does interfere with.
Watching the Crab Fisherman show on the Outdoor Network. Okay, it's down now.
Okay, I can still hear it, but maybe the listeners can't.
Oh, there's nothing else on. No, that's it. It's pretty quiet here. I'm in a basement apartment in Fort McMurray.
Okay. So now, how many times how many prison sentences have you received? Or are you continually on appeal from the first one?
My original sentence was in 03. Since 03, when they gave me 18 months for writing the original letters, I have been in prison 4 times.
Okay. And
we're basically readjusting the same offense. But my last bail condition the judge set out before I came to Fort McMurray 7 years ago, the bail condition was that I was not allowed to contact anyone in Canada without their prior permission. Anyone in Canada without their prior permission.
Right.
Think of that. I couldn't even phone my mother if I didn't get her permission first. Because if I did and she complained about me, you know, technically, I would have been taken to jail again. Like, think of how absurd that is. So that is the original charge that we're trying to appeal.
Well, when you
because it's how absurd it is. It's a one-of-a-kind thing that's never, ever been done in Canada.
Okay, this is the first time that they've researched that and that nobody's ever gotten a rule like that.
No, and you know what? There's absolutely no case law on it for a lawyer, right? Because there's nothing like that. Maybe during the War of 1812, they might have sentenced somebody for treason like that, okay? But you can't refer to that in today's court system. But this is just an absurdity now.
Okay, so how much time have you actually spent in a jail or a prison since 2003? Can you add it up?
I have probably spent 2.5 years in prisons.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you were complaining about the money it's costing you, too.
Of course. I cannot get legal aid because, first of all, my charges are in Toronto, and I live in Alberta. So I'm cross-directional on the legal aid system. They wouldn't give it to me anyway because I'm an oil field worker, right, and I make good money. You know what? People have said to me, Brad, what would happen if you were poor? And you couldn't get on a plane every 4 months to fly back to Toronto to suffer more court hearings. What would happen if you were poor and you couldn't do it? Like, I don't know what would happen. I'd have to throw myself at the mercy of the court and go, sentence me. I'm too. You've worn me out. You've broken me. You've taken my bank account. You've won. But I've been able to maintain my bank account and keep fighting this at my own expense. It's me versus the Canadian government. Yeah, I know. Good luck on that one, Brad. Yeah. Well, I maintain.
Yeah, well, okay, so you continue to work, though you said that when at one time, didn't you have to be in Toronto? At one point they said you had to live with your sister and her husband.
Yes, no, my sister-in-law.
Your sister-in-law.
Right.
Where were they? You said that you couldn't. There was no work in Toronto, and your good job was bad.
I had moved everything to Alberta. All my ID and everything was in Alberta. So what I did in that condition, I paid another $20,000 in cash for the privilege of coming back to my own province and working. I put that money up 4 years. I put that money up 4 years ago. They still have it. Imagine that, taking that kind of money out of your bank account and giving it to the government for 4 years. No interest, no nothing.
That was to assure that you would come back.
Come back.
They would claim your money. Well, they still have it anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
that would make sure I didn't flee the country on this serious breach of probation charge. Just completely ridiculous.
Well, you have a good sense of humor about it, but you're just this type of person who fights and... let's go back to that. You said your father was the same way. You want to talk about that a little bit, maybe about your motivation and why?
Well, you know what? But that didn't motivate me one bit. I seen my father doing it, and I never made the connection. I thought, you know what? Okay, he's writing letters. That looks pretty useless, Dad. And I used to think that when I was young, too. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up doing it myself. And, boy, did I get into trouble. is my father, you know what, and my parents are really ashamed about all of this. They're glad I speak out, but they realize the toll. It's like, hey, Brad, is any of this worth it? Like,
well,
frick, man. I got about two houses with the money I've spent on legal fees.
Well, that is the question, because I was, you know, to be kind of tough on you and a devil's advocate and so on, you know, I wanted to ask, well, all these letters, it is an awful lot of letters, and it does make it look like you're just an unsatisfied person, although I realize that's not the case, but that you're kind of a problem person, and people get fed up with it, and they don't want you to be able to continue to do this, even though ideally it is your right as a citizen to do so.
Yes, yes it is.
And so, but, you know, is it doing any good? Is it accomplishing that much?
Well, I see small things changing in my country. I see small things changing. Little things. Like right now, they're clamping down on immigration. They're clamping down on illegals. They're clamping down on foreign workers. And I tend to think, I've had a part in this. Listen, if I didn't do anything, then I would have no part in this, would I? But I have done a lot of little things. So I feel I have made a mark on the system.
Oh, I think
great. Those people who didn't speak out didn't make any mark, did they?
I think that's great that you're not being so modest. I don't believe in this over modesty. And I myself feel, although I don't want to say it out loud much because I think people think I'm conceited. You know, I know that I believe that what I've done, and it's not, I've never put myself on the line like you do, but what I've done, I know, I think, has made a difference and has made things move forward. And that makes me feel real good. And it's so important. It's so important. If more people would do more and get that feeling themselves, they would realize what it means. And, you know,
there were 1,000 Brad Loves in Toronto. The police wouldn't dare move on them. Wouldn't dare. One guy, then they said, you know, I'm the only guy, when I speak out about immigration, here's what happens. They send 14 white policemen to my house. Then they take me to a jail, which is 98% non-white. Kind of ridiculous, don't you think? Don't you think maybe Brad was right on this one? Yeah. He's the only white guy going to court today. Yeah, I'm chained up to 14 black guys. There's the letter writer, sir. He wrote about immigration. Yeah, I can see his point. But judges don't even get it. They don't get the irony here. They don't. I'm the bad guy. You know what I mean? I got to get more time than all the black guys I'm chained with in the jail bus. That's exactly how it goes. That's when you know there is something in the system that is gunning for you.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, this is the thing. This is what it's hard. Well, we're talking about our personal political representatives. People want to think that their country is okay, even if other countries aren't, or, you know, their representatives are okay. And it's hard, very hard to get past that and get to where you see that, my God, your country is not your country, has no intention of representing you properly, is out to get you. And wants to change this country into something altogether different. There's no doubt that all white, supposedly white, traditionally white countries are scheduled for total race mixed places where whites are going to be a minority of the combination of all the other races, and have no say. And then we will really be powerless.
Really? And, I know.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct. And there are so many civil liberties groups here in Canada, Toronto. And you know what? All they can campaign for is a Chinese poet who is rounded up, or a North Korean activist who is rounded up, or somebody in Myanmar who is rounded up. They don't understand. There's a guy right down the street who is rounded up by your local police force for speaking out, but they will completely ignore you. We're working on that Chinese poet today, Brad. We don't have time for you. In fact, we'll never have time for you. Because the policeman said you're a racist. Okay. That's how it works. These friggin' hypocrites with their tax dollars. Yeah. They're having dinners and free speech and raising money for some artist in Haiti who just got thrown in jail. Don't have time for that white guy, Brad Love, who's been going to court for 4 years. Don't even have time to show up in the courtroom to witness what's going on. Nobody in the media has ever come to court.
Well, you know, another thing is that you're not in the media. You know, when I was looking, I thought I'd find a lot of stories about you, but all I could find was stuff that Paul Fromm wrote and put out.
Complete blackout.
Yeah.
Complete blackout.
Right.
And you know what? If you phone any media outlet in Toronto, whether it's the Toronto Star or the CBC, and ask them, have you ever heard of a guy named Brad Love? And they'll go, yeah, we have. He's not coming down here, is he? and that is it. They will not cover the story.
That also is very much like in Germany. They do that in Germany, too. You know, we get some things usually put out by the Jews because they're bragging about it. And they want to inform their people about it. But in Germany, the Germans are not told about all this junk that the government does against the right wing and all this stuff that people that they're sending to jail and so on. They don't write about it.
No. Right. And that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading today, there's a big story about how journalists are oppressed in Russia. And they lose their jobs, and some have been outright murdered, right? Journalists in Russia, which is fine, that's great, and that's very bad. But what about people who just get rounded up in locally in Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver and New York, because they're suspected to be I don't know what the word is. He's a radical. Yeah, he spoke out once 4 years ago. He's a radical. Let's go get him. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
The media here, they just don't get the connection. You know what I mean? There's no difference between me and some journalist in Moscow who was rounded up because he wrote something about Putin.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no difference.
No, there isn't. And let's go back to that Chinese dissident that they gave. Didn't they give him a Nobel Prize, or they wanted to, or whatever?
The blind guy.
Yeah, you've been compared
to
him, how everybody cared about him, and his situation is really no different than yours.
Of course, the blind guy. What did they do?
Yeah,
they shipped him to New York City where they gave him a teaching job. You know what that's going to cost the American taxpayers? To keep this blind Chinese dissident on a public service payroll? You know what that's going to cost them? I mean, they just don't get it. You know what I mean? China should be helping us, not the other way around. it's great. We got a Chinese blind dissident here. Yeah, well, we don't really need him. He's not really going to be an improvement on our society. Let's face it. You know.
I'm
jealous of the guy.
Go ahead.
I'm jealous of the guy, of course. I wish some government agency would hire me and give me a teaching position because I'm outspoken and oppressed. But that's just not going to happen.
Well, I was just going to comment, on your outspokenness. Now, you are outspoken, but it's very, very refreshing to people who understand what's going on. But people won't do it, and if I get too outspoken, I'm criticized, and because these people think that we're going to turn people off if we're outspoken. And I actually think if we, like you said, if there were even 100 people in combined Canada and U.S. who talked like you, we would be making great progress over what
we are. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, the contrast is, if you go to any comedy club, say downtown Toronto, I mean, walk in, pay to get in, and what are you going to hear? You're going to hear off-color racist remarks. You're going to hear Holocaust jokes. You're going to hear Jewish jokes. You're going to hear gas chamber jokes, and everybody in the crowd laughs. It's amazing. Whether they're white or black or brown or Jewish, everybody will laugh in a comedy club. You say this on the street, you write this down on a piece of paper and send it to an elected official, you're going to get policemen at your door. What is the difference?
You know, when people go to comedy clubs,
if you're on stage or you're in showbiz, you get permission to say whatever you want. Is that, can Jerry Seinfeld make Holocaust jokes and get away with it? Yes, he can. He can. Can anybody else? I don't know. You better get some lawyers. How does that work?
Right. Well, I think how it works is that when people go to some entertainment venue and there's jokes being told, a lot of people will laugh even if they don't appreciate off-color jokes, but they don't want to look like a prude. They don't want to look like they're not people who have a good sense of humor. They don't want to look like the rest of them. And they go ahead and laugh at all. Now, some people really do find it funny, but people will go ahead and laugh and they won't complain because they don't want to be judged by their peers. And if you're out in public, it's a different kind of a judgment. Then it's not
you're
okay.
Right.
So then they won't do it. So this, all this fear of being judged And I know it takes a long time to get over that. I mean, it didn't take you a long time, but most of us, you know, we take in a lot of that growing up, you know, where we don't want to be disapproved of. I mean, I experienced plenty of that because I did tend to want to speak. I was a kind of an outspoken person, but in a lot of things, I never would. And, it takes a lot. I don't know what kind of combination of experiences it takes, but you know, with the internet, it doesn't take as long and people catch on. But now here's something about you. You never got on the internet. Is that right?
Yes. And there's a good reason for that.
Okay.
There are a 100% reason that, and people have told me this. If I owned a computer, as much as the police want to get me, as much as the government official wants to attack me, you know what all they have to do? All they have to do is transfer some child porn onto my computer, and I'm done.
Okay.
You'll never hear from me again.
Well,
Brad Love,
right.
The racist, just turned into Brad Love, the child porn possessor. Do you know what the courts will do to you then? Nobody in Canada has won a child pornography charge. You have to surrender. And that is the one thing I've always been afraid of. The police would intentionally set me up like that.
So by the time the computer age really got going, you know, and so many people were on it, you were already in trouble. So you decided not to do it. And they would also come and take your computer. They would have done that already a long time ago. And just taken everything out of it and studied everything and tried to find something. And there's no point in having it if that's going to happen to you.
I know. I've had police come into my house and take pens and pencils and blank paper. Yes, I have. Yes. You know how ridiculous that is? Yeah. What are you guys doing? I can buy all this tomorrow at Staples again. What are you doing?
Well, we don't have anything else to seize.
Of course you don't. It's in my brain.
They take your writing materials, so you won't.
I know, they take pens off. Oh, I've had them come to my apartments in Toronto and take writing material and pens and blank paper.
That is hilarious.
It's just, if you film this, you wouldn't believe it if it was the Three Stooges. You wouldn't. You wouldn't buy it. It's just too absurd. Adults cannot act like that, can they? Well, yes, apparently they can't, especially when they're government appointed employees and police officials. Yeah.
What would happen if you tried to film them? Well, of course they wouldn't allow it. They'd take your.
And usually when they're doing a search warrant, I'm already in custody by then.
Yeah.
Right? That's how that works in Canada.
Well,
when you're in custody.
Okay, with even your parents wishing you weren't doing what you're doing or thinking you should stop.
Yeah.
How do you keep going when people can't even
But you know what?
Dangerous.
I got a sense of humor, right? And everything I see in the paper, just every day the media tells me that I'm right. Right? I just got back from Toronto, right? What do I see in Toronto newspapers all day? Black shootings, black armored car heist, black robbing the TTC system, another black shooting, another Somalian shooting. And you know what? And the papers always print the same thing. Oh, he was such a good kid. Oh, he was an up-and-comer. I've been reading that stuff for 20 years. All these gangbangers shooting each other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really give a crap if they kill each other off. I don't. But oftentimes, their stray bullets kill innocent people. Yeah. And all I want is the right to speak out. But every time I speak out about this, again, a bunch of white policemen come to my house and arrest me for my intolerance. Yeah.
Yeah, well, now that they've got you, now that you're marked, I mean, you can't speak out.
I still speak out. I still write tons of letters. I still write tons of letters to my elected officials. I speak out every day.
Okay, and
I follow my newspaper every day. I comment on everything.
They don't report you. You're elected.
I don't know if they do or they don't. Because you know what? There's a saying from World War II. If you spy, they'll stick a bayonet up your ass. If you don't spy, they'll still do the same thing. So you might as well just do what you're going to do because they're going to do what they're going to do. You know what I mean? And that's the status quo in this country. I'm not afraid of them. I'm sure they're not afraid of me. Let's just keep going the way we're doing.
So you're resigned. You're resigned to it, and you're going to keep doing it.
Well, I'm 54. I'm probably not going to change, right? I'll probably just get worse. Or, no, hold on. I'll get better at it. Yeah. I'm honing my skills.
Yeah. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this, that this is what is the difference between you and some all these other people and anybody when we really see the nature of the world as it is and the governments that we have and the people who are in there running them and so on. When we really see it, then we will join in the fight, I think. But that is why people don't want to really see it, because they know if they did, they might not be able to just sit back and pretend like it's not affecting them that much.
You're right.
Don't you think? And somehow you saw it, 20 years ago or something.
Yeah.
So when you were even younger than that, how did you see the world?
Well, I grew up in, a very safe suburb of Toronto, it was completely white. There was no immigration back then. I was born in 1958. And then Pierre Elliott Trudeau came to power.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided alone that Canada was going to be a multicultural, let's let them all in and support them kind of country.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who challenges that, if you don't like multiculturalism or open door immigration, anyone who challenges that, they are going to be subject to some punishments. And that's when things started to go downhill. That's when the country started to change. That's when we went from a country with maybe two prisons to a country with 47 prisons. Yeah. And is there a correlation between immigration and crime? And the jail system and the court system and everything else. Of course there is. You'd be stupid not to deny that, okay? You would be. Any lawyer could tell you that as well. Although he would just whisper to you, because he'd be afraid too. Even the lawyers are afraid. They're afraid to take my case. You know how many lawyers I've been through? Right? It's a dirty case. It stinks. It could never be a winner. And you're going to offend other people in the legal community when you take this case. If I was an axe murderer or a child murderer, they'd gladly take my case. Sure, man, they'd line up for me. But this kind of stuff, nah, they're not used to that.
Yeah, and if you were a Muslim immigrant or something, they would be very ready to take your case.
Like, and I beheaded my wife because she looked at another man. Oh, that's a, that's an honor crime. An honor crime? There's honor in crime now? Yeah, that's what they label it here in Canada. Maybe it's just a crazy immigrant who killed his wife. Well, we can't say that because they're not all bad. Well, maybe they are all bad. You know what I mean? By the time you sort them out, you've run out of money.
So, well, going back to Trudeau, there did come this time. And it probably was not just one moment in time, but, over a period of time, when the decision was made that the world would become multicultural and all of us, all of particularly white nations, were the targeted ones.
The world is multicultural.
Multicultural to me is just a nicer word for multiracial. What's the difference?
Crime-ridden is another word, yeah. Well, how about bankrupt?
Well, those are methods, but the goal is multiracialism, and in multiracialism, you have genocide of whites. That's what it does.
Right.
So, you can connect the dots here so easily when talking to somebody like you and looking at your situation and your life experiences, what you can, how you came to think the way you think and see everything. And it really becomes so clear. And somehow we don't reach enough people with this because most people are tuned into the mass media, mainstream media.
They're just too busy watching the hockey game. That's their life. Yeah, they don't want to know about anything harsh. They don't. They don't want to. It scares them. They'll just have to pull more covers over their head at night when they're sleeping because they're frightened. I know. And the government is counting on people like that. That's how they get away with so much.
Well, that's why they offer all this entertainment and all this stuff. They offer it just as much as they can possibly throw on everybody so that's what they will be doing.
There's always $100 million for a new sports stadium. But when the hospital needs another wing, wow, real money shortage going on, folks. You ever notice that? Whether it's in Texas or Toronto, or in Edmonton here, a local city, they've always got $550 million for a new hockey arena. Always. They'll come up with that money. For the seniors' home, the food bank, the crumbling school system, the crowded courtrooms and jails, nah, we don't have any money for that.
I was looking here for, there's another great quote I remembered, and I don't know if I have it somewhere on this page or if I don't, but I can't quite remember what it was. Oh, it might be down here. But let me say this. I was going to ask you, have you ever been married?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. How did that work?
Both my marriages were good.
Okay, you had two marriages.
I had two marriages. My first was to an Italian girl who just lived three doors down from me in my neighborhood, right? And, that was a childhood romance, that kind of thing. She still lives in Toronto. She's remarried now. And my second marriage was to, ironically, a white Jamaican woman. Yeah. Who moved from Jamaica to Port-au-Prince to Toronto. She was she was what you call an embassy child.
Okay. Well, we'll continue this, and do not hang up. We're going to our 5-minute break, so we're gonna have to. You have to just hang on the phone there for 5 minutes, because if you hang up, then we're all screwed up. So just stay on the phone, please. Thank you. And we'll have some music, and then we'll return, and we'll continue. This is really interesting. I'm glad that got you on this program, and I'll look for that quote while we're on our break. So we've got a few seconds, and then the music will kick in.
Okay, I'll stand by.
Okay, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Carolyn Yeager with Brad Love on Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and we will return. Hold on.
Thank you.
You never get arrested for that in Canada.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on the Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and my guest is Brad Love. He's here. He's turned his radio down or whatever. So we're ready to get going again. Our topic is, the free speech or free expression battle of Brad in Canada that's gone on since 2003, where he has spent, he said, about 2.5 years in prison already and lots of money in trying to conform to the court's demands on him, and all because he writes letters to people about, expressing his views on immigration and related issues in Canada, political issues, and they have decided that he is some kind of a nuisance and needs to be found guilty under their laws for that. Right, Brad?
That's right.
Okay. So we were talking, and you were being very forthright about your marriages. The reason I asked you was just because I noticed you don't ever blame women, or I haven't heard you say anything like, get down on feminism or things. So I guess you're not one of the men who sees that as a problem, the problem. Good.
No.
Because I wanted to kind of bring up, that, because you mentioned men wanting to watch hockey on TV and so on, that I think the bigger problem is the problem with men, and I don't think that feminism, when it came along, is what caused that. I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
If you think men are apathetic towards everything political, try examining women. I mean, you can't even go there. You couldn't pay them to protest or write letters. And frankly, they see what happens to men when they do. And why would they go for that? Look what happened to you, Brad. You want me to get in that same boat? Look what they have put you through.
Yeah.
Man, I wouldn't last 10 days in jail. Never mind 10 months. How would I would lose my apartment, my job, my bank account. I would lose my children. The Children's Aid would take them from me because I'm a racist, I'm outspoken, I'm intolerant, I'm a radical. What woman in their right mind would engage in the same stuff I'm doing? Like, you can't blame them.
Well, that's right. That's the thing. Women are different, and I understand the effect that women and wives have on men who are constantly telling them, don't get involved in that radical stuff. Don't you dare go do that, and they don't want their wife to leave them and their,
right.
And get their comfortable life screwed up and their children taken and so on. So yeah, women
right.
do have an effect in that way, but then this is built into the female psyche to be protective of this. And so you can't really expect women to do it. There are women who do a lot, but the men have to do it in spite of the women, or they have to do without a woman, I guess. That's terrible to say. They need to convince their woman. There are women who go along and stand by their men in these
Yes, there things. Are. And you know what? None of my women have left me because of my activities. I mean, let's be sure about that. They frown on me, my activities, and they're, they're remorseful for how long I've been detained and all I've been through, right? They are. But they've never abandoned me because of my beliefs.
Yeah, they don't hate you or anything. They still
No, they would shrug their shoulders all that shit. He's a radical. I know he does this. That's Brad. Whatever. He'll never change. I love him as he is. Okay. And that's a good thing, right?
Well, that's
just part of it.
That is. I'm just trying to get at, from any angle I can, what makes you be so bold and brave and makes most of the men prefer to watch the hockey on TV. So, this is a question that's been asked again and again and again, and we really don't come up with too many answers except that there aren't very many people like you. What makes a person like you? What comes together? In someone, what they're born with and their inner makeup and their environmental influences and the whole thing that comes together to make somebody be a standout person when most, the vast, vast majority are not.
Well, you might think I'm brave, but in a country of 33 million other cowards, like here in Canada, it just looks like I'm brave. You know what I mean? I'm not brave. It's just everyone else is so afraid.
Well, you know? That's just another way of putting it then. If the others are so afraid, why aren't you?
I'm not anything special. I don't know anything. I finished high school, but all I know is what the media tells me. And yes, I'm a horrendous reader. I read everything. And I don't know if it's all the jail time that taught me to read, but I have read thousands of books in my life. Thousands.
Wow.
On everything, from history to politics to comedy to, you know what? I've just read everything, and I devour every newspaper I can get a hold of in Fort McMurray. I go to the library, I read newspapers, and I ingest it all, and I compile it all. I connect the dots, and then I send it back out again to those who are in charge. And who are involved in these political stories or anything else that I read about.
Do you keep a copy?
Is that simple?
Well, I'm gonna have more to say about that, but do you keep a copy of your letters? Ought to be. It's too bad they couldn't be, put in a book, or.
If I had to copy all my letters, I would need another apartment.
Well, I understand, but it would be great to know what you write in these letters. How long are they exactly? Oh, I forgot to say
my letters. My letters always include newspaper articles or handwritten articles that I have written and typed out and copied at the library, and they are short and they are to the point, and they are always ironic. They are always funny, right? And they always have a twist in them. You know what I mean? And like I said earlier, I might write the immigration minister because there's a story today on, say, a bunch of gypsies that were rounded up in Toronto because they had a theft ring or a pickpocket ring. And I will send that article to the immigration minister, Jason Kenney, and I will say, hey, Jason, this is just another one of your success stories that's costing me money, isn't it, buddy? I love you, man. And I would just send it to him just like that. And I'm sure he'll see it, or his office staff, and they'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, Jason Kenney, the immigration minister, is trying to crack down on gypsies entering this country from Romania and the Ukraine and those kind of countries. He's trying that. But he's doing a very lousy job because, again, there are so many special interest groups in his way. Who
yes.
somehow want gypsies in this country. I don't know what their motivations are for this.
Well, we know
there
can
be
determined.
No good from this. But yeah, it's up against the same crowd that I'm up against.
Yeah, it's to change the countries and genocide. And we need to get people aware of this and saying this and thinking about this. The motivation for it is genocide of whites. That's it at the bottom line, even though it might
yes.
sound shocking. But if you say that to people and they say, how can that be? Then you can maybe explain it a little bit. Well, Brad, we got a caller. He's on the line here, another unknown phone number, but I've taken the call. So hello, caller. Can you give us your name and where you're from?
Hi, my name is Lou. I'm calling from Minnesota. Thank you very much for taking the call, and I find it very interesting. I would like to ask the guest, do you be charged with harassment or terroristic threats here at all, or?
No, I have not. And it's, you cannot, everybody I write to are organizations or political groups. You cannot be charged with harassing an organization or a politician. If I wrote you letters, sir, 14 times a week, then I could be charged with harassment because you're just a general citizen. But in Canada, you have to know the law. You can't be charged with harassment for stuff like that. Not for the people that I write. These are politicians. They work for me, and their newsletters and their outgoing mail always says, hey, contact us if you have any issue. When you read mm-hmm. that gives you carte blanche to send them anything and as much as you want.
And what about nonprofit organizations? Excuse me, Lou. Because I figured that a lot of these organizations that you write to would come under that heading. So if you're a nonprofit organization, you have to take what people send you to, right? I mean,
you cannot be harassed, right?
Yeah.
Joe Blow can be harassed. Joe Blow's charity, open target. Send them as much as you want. Just don't be threatening. Okay? Watch your language. To a certain point, you can use most bad language. Yes, you can, because you hear it all over the radio and the Howard Stern show. So obviously, that's free game now, too. You can do that. But yeah, just don't threaten anybody.
Well, what are they charging you with, then, if not harassment and if not...
They are charging me, first of all, they often charge me under Article 319 of the hate crime law in Canada. They charge me under that if I write certain things about certain groups, or if I even headline what other people have written about them in the media, and I send that. You can be charged that way. Or you can just be charged under different little laws, especially like the breach of probation law, where you're not supposed to be sending anything to anybody. Well, then the police think they can just come and arrest you for that. Even if you phone that person and you've gotten permission from that person to send him stuff, they can just come back and charge you anyway. Strange it is. They'll charge you no matter what. It's up to you and the judge in the courtroom to figure it all out later. At your expense, sir. Yes, your great expense.
Have you ever been convicted of other crimes other than this, what you're being charged with now?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Which crimes you've been convicted of?
What was that? You're breaking up.
Yeah.
May I ask what type of crime you've been convicted of in the past, other than
they would charge me with various paraphernalia. They would charge me with leather coats with different insignias on them, and they would confiscate all this and charge me with that as well.
Well, have you been charged with legitimate crimes? With any legitimate type of crime? Oh, okay.
No.
So when you say that, you just mean that they find other ways than letter writing too.
Yeah. They in Canada, when they charge you with an offense, they never charge you with one offense because they realize you might weasel out of that. When you get charged in Canada with something, they level seven different charges on you. They'll charge you with this and suspicion of that and possession of this, and then you've got to go to court and wheedle all of these down. That's how it works in Canada.
For example, have you been charged with drug possession or drugs and paraphernalia possession?
No. I'm a 54-year-old white guy. I've probably smoked one marijuana joint my whole life. I like a can of cold beer, bro, and that's it. I stay within the law in those regards. Besides, you know, drugs are for losers. Let's face it. They're what ruined my country anyway.
You've been convicted of any, you know, misdemeanors or felonies, you know, like theft or check right bad checks, anything like that? No crimes? Clean right?
No, I got a couple of speeding tickets way back, but, you know, that's about it. They've just seemed to concentrate on all of this political related stuff. Because, you know what? All the other stuff, like a drug charge, I could beat that tomorrow. I could get a lawyer, and I'd get a lesser sentence than all of this.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, that's all cut and defined in the law system. You can beat that stuff. But the stuff that they charge me with, it's very unfamiliar to the courts and the judges. Because nobody else has been charged with this. They don't know what to do with it. Well, they know what to do with it. Let's hit them with the maximum sentence. Yeah.
You're being charged with hate speech, in other words. In other words, you're being charged with racial hate or hate speech. Would that be sound correct?
Yeah, hate writing, not speech, writing.
Okay. So this is what I think Carolyn alluded to. Like in Germany, if you write things negative about a certain any race, you know, other than the white race, you'd be charged with a crime, correct, Carolyn? But not in the U.S., I believe. Would I be correct?
That is correct. But I see so many journalists in my local paper reporting negatively on immigration and certain this and Somalians and Tamil boat people and everything, and how they're manipulating the courts to stay here or raise money for terrorist offenses abroad. I see all journalists doing that, and I'm thinking, that's great. Now, can I do that too? Or do I have to be in the journalist profession to do that? As a normal working man, can I write the same thing too? Well, apparently you can't.
Well, in America here,
go ahead.
Pat Buchanan in our country, in the United States, Pat Buchanan was fired by MSNBC, which is a large TV network, and he was fired for speaking negatively about immigration, and they gave that as a reason for firing him. But he couldn't be charged with a crime for it.
No, but he lost his livelihood. Yes. That has happened to numerous people here in Canada. Both people in the media and people out of the media. And you know what? The media just doesn't seem to get it. Right?
The media are the first ones
to pile on me when I'm charged. Well, but they don't seem to get it. If they can come for me, then they're going to come for Pat Buchanan. Do you get that? That is the trail they're going to leave. Big or small, they're going to come and get you if no one will speak out and help defend you. They're going to get you.
Brad, do you consider the media to be just in the dark here or something? And,
you know what? They are intentionally in the dark because they think speaking out is only for them. Yeah, we're the only ones who can write about this. Who are you to be a journalist, Brad? You don't work for the newsroom here. How dare you speak out? And when you are arrested, man, you watch us pile up on you.
Well, I don't think that's it. I think that the media is more powerful than the government.
Well, not in this country. The media are a bit on the run here.
What media is on the run?
Carol, can I point out, you know, the thing with Pat Buchanan is that he had spoken out against Israel a number of times, and what they did is they waited until he spoke out against immigration, and that's when they fired him and claimed that that's why they were firing. I believe the real reason that they fired him is because of the thing he said about Israel, because other people in the media have spoken out against immigration and nothing happens to him. But those are people who have not
The fact is you cannot speak out without getting into trouble one way or another. But it's not...
Right, so you might as well do it anyway.
It's not the media that's afraid of saying anything. It's the media... It's the media that is more responsible for all of this situation than anybody else. The government is afraid of the media. Politicians are afraid of the media because of the power of the media.
Right. Let's be clear. I have spoken out in my lifetime a ton of times about Israel. And about my government's connection to Israel, Israel is a country for the ultimate racist, right? Really, it is. They have a strong electric fence to keep out foreigners. That fence is manned by unmanned machine guns, remote control. They have a Jews-only immigration policy. They take money from other nations and promote their own people. I want to be like Israel. I want Canada to be like Israel, a racist enclave for my own people. Right. But you know what? Apparently the Jews here won't allow me to do that. They want Canada to be, unlike Israel, a multicultural, let's let them all in, anything goes country with a very weak government.
Well, that's
why can't I be like Israel?
The government is dancing to the tune of those who are above them. And they call themselves there, though, the crown. So when you're in court, I notice, you know, they say, well, the crown says this and the crown says that. It really places them above the ordinary citizen. Of course, any court is above the ordinary citizen. But this is not the quote I was looking for, but here's one that about your case, Brad, is that the crown said that while noting the content of the material sent by you to Hillel, one of those, the Jewish,
Students Union, yes. Very outspoken militant right-wing union too. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear from anybody else. But yeah, go on.
Anyway, she said that the content of what you sent to them is not relevant, but then immediately denounced it as offensive and anti-Semitic.
Really? Yes, I know. And during this whole 3.5 years long trial, she wouldn't allow anything to be read into the record. Right? Anything. She wouldn't allow it. Because, hey, Brad, it's not about the context. It's about the fact that you sent it. But then when she sentenced me, all of a sudden it's about the context.
That's
don't get that.
Exactly what they do in Germany. In fact, Sylvia Stoltz just, I don't know if she just wrote that. I just saw it. She just came out with something about Gunter Deckert's trial. He's supposed to be getting released from a prison. He had to spend 6 months. He's supposed to be, or five, I don't know, he's released in May. So I'm watching for that. But she made that point that, you know, nothing about any facts or even anything that's been written or whatever can be introduced. And, you're saying that what you wrote, they say on the one hand, yeah, it's not about that. It's about simply the fact that you wrote it. And that's what they say in Germany. They say it's not about the facts of the Holocaust. It's just the fact that you're denying it and you're not allowed to do that. And
right.
You're not allowed to write letters anymore.
Right.
Right.
So
they've taken away your right to write letters because somehow you've abused that right.
Right. My grandfather's fought in World War II for me to have the privilege to live my life like this. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's
Are
not
you
what
freaking
they thought
kidding
for.
Me?
They thought
they must
they
be rolling
that,
in their graves.
Well,
really?
You know,
I mean,
everybody who thought what they're fighting for, it's not what they're fighting for. They're fighting
for
this.
They got
people.
Everything wrong. Everything that we found out was right is now wrong. Incredible.
Yeah. In the United States, a lot of times federal prosecutors will charge people violations of the mail laws by the fact, in other words, if you had written these letters by hand, they've got laws where you're violating the mails by mailing the letters. Is that what the angle that they're trying to work on you?
No, they never did that here. No. The fact is that most of my writings are one-on-one. I write to one person individually. So there is no public display of hate. I am just writing to a certain individual. Now, if this individual takes this letter and posts it on billboards and blows it up and puts it on a website, then he is actually in the offense of hate. But that never happened. Right? So, in fact, when I was charged originally in 2003 for the original hate, they charged me under the wrong law. Right? Because there was no public display of hate, and that's what it has to be in Canada. One-on-one writings are not a public display of hate. You don't like my letter, throw it away. You like my letter and you display it on a billboard, well then the police are going to come for you too. So my lawyer basically sold me out in the long run, back in 2003 when all of this started.
Oh.
So what are you charged with now? Is it just what they call it? What do they say?
I am charged with breach of probation. Under the law, under the probation order, that I was not allowed to contact anyone in Canada without their prior approval.
Right.
Oh,
now,
okay.
Now here's the thing. What kind of chances do you think you have? Where does this whole thing stand? When do you go back to court? I think what happened was that you just came back for a court hearing, and then they told you that they had delayed it. And so you made that trip for nothing.
Yeah, I just went July 29th. I spent 2 weeks in Toronto and thousands and thousands of dollars. They put it off. I went to court last Monday and spent 2 hours in court signing paperwork, and now I'm here. All of that was for nothing. My next court date is August 29th.
And so then you have to travel back. And
travel back to Fort McMurray, do all of it again. August 29th, I'm not sure what day it is, but I have to surrender myself into the jail the day before that. Unless it's delayed again. And one never knows about the Toronto court system. The Toronto court system is completely jammed up. Completely jammed up. Especially in the summer when a lot of Crown attorneys and judges take summer holidays. But the crime rate doesn't diminish in Toronto. It gets worse. It is just horrendously jammed up. Probably worse than New York City. Probably.
Well, you have an attorney. You have an attorney now. Do you have faith in him? Or is that somebody from the past?
You know what? I have never had real faith in any attorney because I can, when I talk to them and I look at them, I know they're afraid of this case. Mm-hmm. I know they are. They're walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm just guessing somewhere along the line it was some comment that you about Jews or Israel that's really what's got them.
Well, we just said that he's not allowed. He's being accused of being anti-Semitic. You know, and hate is always being directed at Jews. And so, yeah, that's a huge part of it. But the thing is, do you think, Brad, that that this might when the court quits their delays, when they finally have time to deal with you, you will be put back in prison, and for how long?
I'm not sure. We are appealing both the conviction itself, and we are appealing the sentence.
Okay.
The conviction is unjust. The sentence is completely out of line for an offense like this. Considering I haven't lived in the province of Ontario for 7 years, okay, what do they want with me? Like, really, I've left the province. Isn't that enough? But no, they still got their hooks in me. Let's keep dragging them back. Yeah, well, I know. Oh.
What is the sentence? Oh, the sentence right now is 18 months, isn't that right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's the current one. Hey, this is a confusing case to get straight.
You know what? It's so confused. It's only confusing and so convoluted because it's been going on for so long. Right? This could be a triple homicide. It's over in 12 months. Now, this is a breach of probation. I'm on the fourth year now. Can you believe that?
Well, you know, that's how they do with cases like yours because they're not clear. They don't want to make a mistake where they're going to be reversed by the higher courts. And they're just happy to keep you tied up and keep you from writing and doing much and saying much, which you can't do right now. Isn't that correct? Or do you keep breaking that?
No, I you know what? Okay, now that I'm on, they've convicted me, but my probation is over, right? So now I'm kind of free and clear to write anybody I want. But this is kind of I'm in the eye of the storm right now.
Okay.
And I'm allowed to write to whoever I want because the law is in limbo. So, yeah, I'm taking full advantage of that. Yeah, I'm writing every day.
You should write a letter to Alan Dershowitz asking if he'd take your case.
Oh, yeah. I've contacted a few lawyers like that. Yeah, and the first thing they think, well, my retainer's going to be $10,000. I thought you work on carte blanche, you know, free of charge, like you did that child rapist. No, Brad, no. Not your charge? No, Brad, we're not helping you on that. The child rapist, yeah, I'll work for his case for free. You, letter writer, I don't think I can do that. Can you see the absurdity here? Yeah. Oh, it's incredible, man.
Well, you know, there's a couple of stories here I wouldn't mind having your comment on. And if there's something more that comes up in your mind that you want to tell us, please do. But I've kind of run out of questions. So there's a story just came out that white Britons are now a minority in London. Well, that's certainly not surprising when you see these pictures of what's going on in London. But they call it white flight. But there's more than 600,000 white British Londoners have left in the last decade. And they have gone, though, to other, you know, out in the countryside, which is good. Some rural areas have seen a rise in the number of people who describe their ethnicity as white British. But there's your mother country, so to speak, not really so much anymore, but, you know, which has absolutely the intention of destroying the white British race and white rule in Britain. And it already has. And the politicians can't do it fast enough.
Absolutely true. And you know what? The hate crime laws in the UK are 10 times worse than they are here. If I'd been living in the UK right now, you'd never hear from me again. I'd be in some prison in northern Scotland, never heard from again. You think it's bad here? Go to the UK. You know where the Queen and democracy kind of all started? Oh, yeah. And you know how many people I see from the UK in my town, truck drivers and stuff? You know how many doctors and professional people I see who have fled South Africa in my town? Oh, yes, black and white. They're here. Now, that kind of tells me, you know, and I ask them, well, why, is something wrong with your country? And they'll just kind of look at me and just, you know, with a kind of sideways glance, like they don't even want to talk about why they ran away. That's how bad it is. You know what I mean? When you see black professionals running away from South Africa, you realize something didn't go right there. That whole Mandela thing and African rule didn't really work out for you guys, did it? Yeah.
Not at all. And that, you know, these are lessons.
As soon as white people start helping Africa, you know they're doomed. Yeah. Nothing good can come of that. You know, all those good intentions go right out the window, and violence and everything just goes nuts over there.
And you know, the, go ahead.
If you were to ask, I was just going to say to Carolyn, you know, but if you would ask Michael from Collins Piper about,
Lou, you know, you keep trying to turn the show into something different than what it is. So I'm not interested in that, in what Mike Piper might say about it. I have nothing against Mike Piper, but you know, you're always stuck on that RBN thing. I know who you are. I know you are, what's his name? Who I've already can't remember, but anyway, the old caller. But you're welcome on here. But I would like to just make the point with Brad, who is the guest here, that I forgot now what it was. But well, these politicians, you know, these were the victors of World War II, and they are the ones that are that have gone totally and they embraced the new, you know, the great victory of democracy and so on over tyranny, blah blah. And these countries have gone totally into the trash heap, and Britain is probably leading the way, and that was what led the way in the war.
The UK is completely run and devoted to closed circuitry television on the streets everywhere, and all of this is because of the horrendous crime nightmare that is going on there.
And they won't admit it. They won't admit they're wrong.
Oh, no, they won't. No, well, you know why? Because they're too busy. The police are usually, if they're not arresting white people, then they're keeping an eye on the local E-man who's having a street demonstration condemning British soldiers in Afghanistan. And that is perfectly legal for him. He's calling for the death of British soldiers in a Muslim country, completely within his religious rights. Now, if white people tend to argue against this, they will be the first ones rounded up. While this E-man on the streets, this Islamic leader, supposedly, he is completely allowed to do whatever he wants. Man, am I jealous of this guy.
You know, Brad, you should have a radio show. Could you have a radio show in the United States? You really should.
I'm not allowed to travel to the United States. What's that?
Yeah, you're being wasted just writing letters. You've got so much to say.
People always tell me that, Brad, you're so animated, you can speak so well. You should be on television. Well,
yeah.
Well, you stuck TV people. See if they want to meet on television.
Well, we don't have. I don't think we have any television yet, but we do have white radio, and you really should be on it and should have your own show. It's too bad.
Yeah.
See, now that's another way they think about all these things long before we do. So they say we got.
Right.
You got to stop this guy before he becomes a, you know, a sensation, and he's out there speaking, you know, making speeches to thousands of people and hundreds of thousands of people. Because you do have it. You have it. It's really a shame that our people who have it get entangled with legally and can't use
exactly.
It.
That's the tragedy, man.
It is. Arndt Sundell, Germar Rudolph. You know, Germar Rudolph, they're both free out of jail now, but they can't do anything. They can't do anything.
Nope.
They can't make you know, publicly, or they'll be right back in there again. They keep that.
I have known Arndt Sundell from the 70s.
Uh-huh.
I've been to his house. I've had supper with him. I've known him from when he was nothing. So one of his supporters seen my letter to the editor once in a Toronto newspaper, whatever I was writing about, and he called me out of the blue. And he said, "Yeah, can I meet you?" I go, "Sure, you can meet me. I'm always willing to meet anybody." So we had coffee, and then he told me of Zundel, and "Would you like to go down to Zundel's house?" I go, "Sure, man. I'm not doing anything today. I'm always open for anything. Yeah, I'm an open-minded guy. I'll hear your side of the story or anybody." And that's how I met Ernst Zundel in the 70s. And I've known him and his struggles and the same, what he's been through. And on the day that Ernst Zundel was deported from Canada was the day, once, that I was arrested for a breach of probation charge. And as soon as the police officers put me in the cruiser and took me to court that day, they said to me, "Ernst Zundel got deported today. You're the new guy, Brad."
Are you kidding?
That's when I knew I might be in a bit of a trouble here.
I believe you. I believe they said
Two white policemen told me that. I'm thinking, you friggin' sellouts. You sellouts. All right, I'll play your game. Okay. All right. So I stepped in the Zundel shoes. Big deal. I'll take it. I can wear them. You got anything harder for me? You're throwing me in the worst detention centers in Canada. You got anything harder? No. If that's it, okay, I can deal with you then. All right. You've toughened me up. You sharpened the sword, okay? So now I'm ready for them. That's it. I'm 54 years old. I work 84 hours a week. The government takes half. I have a right to speak out, yell out, scream out, or write out about anything that costs me money. I have that right. I've paid for that right. My parents did. My grandparents paid for that right.
Have you ever heard from John Beatty of the British show? White Party or whatever he calls it.
No, can't say I have.
British
Although
Canadians.
I do read things from the British National Party once in a while. Some other people send me little
Canadian inserts. I meant the British Canadian Party. He's Canada's British people or something like that. He calls it.
Oh yeah,
himself.
And he's here in Canada.
Yeah, it's Canada. He's a Canadian too.
Oh, okay.
And he never contacted you, huh?
No, never have. And you know what? A lot of these so-called patriotic groups, they are just as afraid as anybody else.
Well, that's
right. Yeah, they're proud and nationalistic, but, oh, sorry, Brad, we're not taking up that case.
We're not going there.
But I thought you were proud and militant. Good British tradition. Stand up against tyranny. Oh, well, not against that kind of tyranny, Brad. Sucks to be you, but good luck with that. Yeah, I know.
I run into that constantly. I've been lately looking for somebody to do shows for me on the Heretics Hour Monday night. And even though, until you get put in prison, and if you're able to speak out now, maybe you would do it that way. I mean, I could be there as like the host, but and you could do the show yourself. If you were going to do a 2-hour program on your own with just a 5-minute break in between, what would you do? I mean, I'm sure you could do a good job of that.
Right. I know the issues, whether it's America or Canada. I know the issues because whether it's the Keystone Pipeline or Obama's gun control or nuclear reduction or everything the United States is spending money on or their pullbacks, I'm well aware of everything. And the fact is, most Americans are not. No, they want to just watch who won the local NBA game last night. I know. And the government's counting on people like that. Wow, apathetic people. Yeah, we like that. Government likes that. But, again, I am totally informed on what's going on in America because you know what? America is failing right now. And if America fails, they're going to bring down Canada with it because you're our number one trading partner. All that oil we dig for in Fort McMurray, it goes to the United States. If you guys start hurting anymore, you're going to hurt us. It's in my best interest that your country improves. Although
that kind of legal harassment that they get away with in Canada is going to come here. They want to institute it here too. They want to take away that absolute guarantee of free speech that we have.
Right.
And people somehow are still complacent about that. The complacency is the worst thing. And I know 5, 6, 7 years ago, people who said liberals who said, "Oh, when things get bad enough, I'll be out there marching in the street too." Well, these people are never going to march in the street because they never that bad enough keeps being pushed, you know, further bad as time goes on, just like the Congress will push away, you know, the budget limit, you know, that they have when
right.
they need to. So, but yeah, I'm going to call on you to come back, and I don't know if it would be this month, maybe, but certainly in June. What is your how do you think it looks? Is you well, you already said here. I'm figuring my own stuff out here. How do you think it looks for your continuing being you know, not having to go to prison yet, or not getting the final sentencing because of all the overcrowding? You can't really
well,
say.
No, it that means nothing. And you know what? I've always lived in most of my adult life with everything hanging over my head, thinking, what can the government dream up next for me? And how will I be ready for it? And that's kind of, you know, that's no way to live your life in this country. Knowing how hard I work and how long hours I work, no one should have to live under that, right? If there's anybody they should grant immunity to because of the hours and the income tax and the effort I put into being a Canadian, a hardworking guy who puts into the system, no, no, no. All of that means nothing. I might as well be dealing crack on the streets and making child porn in my basement for all they care. They don't care you're a good worker, hard-working, tax-productive guy. They don't care about that. You're too outspoken. We got to hang you. Yes?
That's true. That's true.
My work effort has nothing to do with living in this country. Politicians don't care. A matter of fact, it confounds them. Wow, this guy works a lot. What's his problem? What's his problem? I got a lot of I got a lawyer's bills to pay for. Because of you guys.
Well, in the United States, Brad, you know, under Obama, but under all of them, but you really can see it under Obama, they prefer the lazy people on welfare. They want more and more and more of these people. And
yes,
they want to soak what they call the rich more and more, yeah. just in order to destroy everything. I don't know what they're going to do after it's all destroyed. Do you have any ideas? You're a very smart guy. I determined that you have to be highly intelligent to do all this that you're doing. So do you have any idea what they think they're going to do when we, the working people, just finally kind of collapse and are no longer able to keep the thing going? What are they going to do then?
I think their intention is to keep wearing us down until the time, you know, when you've lost everything and your job is done and you've got no savings and you're almost homeless. By then, you are so burnt out, you won't even protest that. You've got nothing else to lose. Will you go on the street and protest? And by this time, I think the government will have most people so domesticated, so tamed, so afraid, they won't even protest that. They'll just get in the next line with all the homeless and the welfare people and get that check, and then they'll become one of them. And that's true multiculturalism. You see, you've integrated these people into the next lower category, and that's what you've done. And you've done it slowly but surely, and nobody said anything, nobody connected the dots, nobody's seen it coming, and you've just lulled them into this. So, see, poverty's a good thing. Don't strive too hard. Don't be too aggressive. Don't do anything. Let the government take care of you, and everything will be all right. Well, you know what? It's not going to be all right. And it never has been. And if you follow history, how many other countries fell like that?
Well, so it'll be like kind of like the plantation, as people talk about the plantation. We'll just have the elite ruling class, and then there'll be the managerial class, you know, all the sellouts, and then you'll have all the slaves and the working people who don't even know enough anymore. It's been bred out of them to protest, and they'll be given lots of entertainment, you know, to keep them happy. But they'll be doing enough
work.
True. There isn't that much work to be done anymore, maybe they figure. So, and that's...
And no one will question anything. And if they open up a camp somewhere on the northern part of your town and put a big wire fence around it and they start herding people into it and nobody says anything and no one questions anything, then you know all of this anti-free speech activity will have been a success for the government. And what's that funny smell at night? It smells like they're burning or gassing bodies in there. But don't say anything. See what happened to Brad Love? This is how free speech goes on. You know what I mean? But everyone thinks, oh, we anti-free speechers are neo-Nazis or something. But you know what? When the Nazis take power, I'm the first guy they come and get. I'm the first guy in line.
First guy into that camp. First guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, somebody just called, but when I went to answer the call before I got it done, they had hung up. So another one of these undisclosed numbers. So if they want to call,
whole country's undisclosed. People are pulling back.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Yeah, well, I've never had so many of them.
you can read something into it, or you can't. And I tend to not to, but whatever.
I was going to say that this is not conspiracy theory. This whole idea of what they've got in mind is not. It's plain as day to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And then you spoke about people going into these camps and nobody saying anything. And you know, it is exactly. Lou will appreciate this, I guess. It is exactly the Jews who used this about the Holocaust. You know, nobody spoke up. People stood by and watched what was happening to the Jews. And they're the ones who are behind doing this to everybody.
I know.
And it didn't really count.
Shouldn't be surprised if they start rounding them up again and no one says anything. You should not be surprised, okay? You have brought about your own downfall.
Well, they did it then, too.
Sorry.
You know, they did it then, too. And
yes?
We're not sorry to see them go, truthfully. But that's what they can't admit. They decide there's something wrong with all the people who didn't rush to save them.
Every nation on this planet, at one time or another, has had its purge. We know that. That's a documented fact. And you have to wonder, in your own little mind, if there is a reason for this. Can all of these people be wrong?
No.
And you have to question that. And people have questioned that. There have been numerous books written about this, okay? But when you bring it up in any discussion, you are immediately shut down. Although, you know what? Often Jewish groups have brought this discussion to the forefront. And even they don't have the answers. It's embarrassing, and it makes people stare down at their feet, and nobody really wants to get to it. But it's just part of history. It's part of human nature. And trust me, you know what? As someone living in a free country, I don't approve of any of this. I don't approve of rounding people up for their views. No, I don't, because I'm the first guy they come for, right? But when other hypocrites try to shut me down because my views conflict with their views, that's the problem I have with these people.
Right.
And the way that they control the courts, and the media, and the crown attorney is with them, and the judge is with them. I have a problem with that. Yes. When they're overrepresented in the legal system, and then they throw me into the legal system. I have a problem with that. I know it's going to be a problem for me, personally. Yeah. My own lawyer told me this. Brad, you know who we're up against here?
What should open people's eyes. But sometimes until it happens to them, it doesn't open their eyes, you know.
Yeah. People don't understand it, yeah. Sucks to be you, Brad, until it happens to you. But usually by the time it happens to you and you're in custody and in jail, it's too late. It's too late to do anything. It's all an uphill battle. And if you don't have the money for it, good luck. You're best pleading guilty tomorrow and getting it done with and start your time. Yeah.
Well, another thing is just being in custody. Being in custody is a terrible, terrible experience, but some people handle it better than others, and strong men handle it better than not-so-strong men, I guess, and certainly better.
It's all about good coping skills.
But how do you handle it? You obviously handle it very well, but that doesn't mean that it's not a terrible thing, because most people can't.
I don't like it, of course. I don't like it, but... It's a stumble on the road. You got to get through it. No one will help you there. No one will sympathize for you. It's up to your own individual spirit to get through that, right?
Right.
And it's like doing a stint in the army. You know what I mean? It toughens you up.
It does, and it causes you to reach inside and develop your spirit better, or bring that forth. You have to, don't you?
And oddly enough, it's a great place and time for me to write even more letters, because they give you all that stuff for free in there.
and you're allowed to write letters when you're in prison for writing
letters? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Let's face it, most of the prison staff are almost illiterates. They would not know what I was writing about.
they would read that letter and get so bored as it goes out. They wouldn't censor it or anything. They wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Okay? They're Neanderthals there, which is okay. That's their job. It's not much of a job, but whatever. And this allows me, and yes, I can generate a ton of mail when I'm in custody. And all of it's for free. So yeah, just keep sending me, just bring me some more blank paper and some pencils, man. Watch me write. I know.
Well, that's the thing. Well, a lot of people do make good use of their time, intelligent people. When they are incarcerated, they study and read and learn new things, or like you're doing, you continue with your letter writing work, or they do, you know, a number of things like that. They study, go, you know, do spiritual work or whatever. But I guess, are the ones who just watch TV and go in the
record. Yeah, watch TV or fight and get into trouble. Or you can try and improve yourself. You can make the best of a bad situation. How about that? Isn't that how our teachers and parents told us to be when we were young?
Yeah.
So many people forgot that, eh? Yeah, make the best of a bad situation. Try and improve. Look into yourself. How can you exploit this condition?
That's right.
For people who are smart, do exploit it. Yes, of course.
Is the food, I think I would have such a problem with the food. I'm such a wimp.
Well, everybody is hungry in jail. Everybody's hungry in jail. It's a constant thing. You can buy junk food on the commissary.
The quality of the food is probably not that good. Institutional food?
Yes. Yeah. The Ontario jail system is horrendous. It's so overcrowded, so underfunded. There's nobody watching it. When you're in jail, there's nobody advocating for you. The media doesn't care you're in jail. You must have done something to get there. So, yes, you deserve to eat like a bird. And let's face it, prisoners are the new Jews. They're easy to pick on, and no one will come to their rescue. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? That's a bit of an odd connection, but it is completely true. No one will come and help. I don't want to end up in there, too.
Yeah. Before the show is over, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes still, though. I want to ask you to – oh, you don't have email. I want to ask you – I don't know how we're going to – I will do this through Paul. Does Paul Frohm have your phone number, I assume?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, I want – I'll give you –
your number on the air? I'll give you my number. I don't care.
Oh,
you want my number on the air?
Sure, if you don't mind.
780?
Uh-huh.
792?
Uh-huh.
1606. That's my direct cell phone number. It's in my pocket right now. That number's never changed. I've had it for 7 years.
Well, good. I'll get in touch with you. All right. So
call me anytime, anywhere.
Well, do you have any final? Would you like to sum up, or have any things of your own you'd like to say that I haven't covered?
It's just refreshing. I got this story out. It's unreal that I have to get this story out to a different country. Because no newsroom in Canada will ever phone me for this story. How odd is that? I have to speak to somebody in another country about this case. I know, in a country where this case would not occur, generally. If there were little oddities in the story, it might happen in the United States. But for simple letter writing and for the amount of time and effort that the government has spent coming after me, I don't think that would happen in the United States. First of all, there would be money issues. How much to prosecute and persecute this guy? Because we really don't have it. But in Canada, they'll just print more money to come after me, no matter what other crime is going on. I seem to be at the forefront. I'm always the number one guy they pick up first.
I think the United States, as bad as it is one of the few places where things can still be said and get done people can be heard. How many people get their websites as a U.S. Domain kind of thing because they can't do it in their own country? I think I've often thought that the United States and Canada together are kind of the last bastion, but even though Canadians generally think that they're better off than the United States, but that's, again, I would really like to understand that better, but I think that that it's worse in Canada than it is here.
Of course it is.
Okay.
We are a democracy turning into a hypocrisy. And nobody
yeah, well,
really
we're, we're a plutocracy.
Yeah, I know. Nobody seems to be making that connection. As long as they got a steak on the table and a cold beer and the hockey game's on tonight, they are completely complacent. But you start taking these little things away from them, and maybe people will start waking up. Maybe. But so far, I have not seen it happen. And it's very discouraging. Very discouraging. I keep seeing more and more people being rounded up, or losing their jobs or their livelihood, or being censored, or dragged before a human rights tribunal, or anything like that. I keep seeing that. And obviously, the situation is getting worse in Canada. When our own MPs can't speak in the House of Commons about certain personal issues that they believe in, then you know there's a crackdown going on.
Yes, I think this is the key, that what needs to be done is to get more people aware of how serious the situation is. And I think those who want to continue to speak carefully, and so they won't get in trouble and won't offend anybody, are not going to bring that about. I don't think we're going to scare people away. Well, you can scare some people away, or they can have a bad reaction. But I think you're going to, in the end, reach more people by talking very tough than you are by being careful in what's being said. So, you know, even though they might have a bad reaction to begin with and say, oh, yeah, I'll run away from you, they're going to think about it. And stronger things have to be said so people get used to hearing it.
I know.
All right.
Okay, I thank you for your time, man. It was great talking to you. Really, great. Refreshing, great. Yes,
Great. Yeah, it was great for me. Let's see. We've still got about 45 minutes. So we still got 30 seconds. Well, I'll just cover this. I usually am saying goodbye while the music's playing. So, Brad, it's been great here, and I want to thank you so much. I thank Paul Frome. I thank Dimitar for writing to me and asking me if I'd have you on, and I certainly now want to have you on again, and I'll be in touch with you. So,
okay,
ladies and
anytime.
Gentlemen, there's no website or to give for Brad, but and there's not very much news to read about him. I guess if you want to read about him, you go to Paul Frome's committee Canadian Association for Free Expression. Cafe, C-A-F-E. And in the meantime, thank everybody for listening, and good day.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at CarolynYeager.com.